Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. And on this episode, my guest is Stormy Granzig, making his first ever podcast appearance. So we talk all about working for Dick the Bruiser, Spike Huber, and the Phantom title change, and much more. And that interview is coming up soon. Hopefully you guys all checked out the latest bonus episode I released, the Stampede Deep Dive. The first episode of that on January 1988, I told you it was coming. I know it was much later than what I anticipated, but it is here. Hopefully you enjoyed that. It is a work in progress to get those things rolling and find my groove on those. But hopefully you enjoyed the first episode of that. Hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Hopefully everybody got to spend some time with their family or their friends or whoever it is that you enjoy spending time with. Hopefully everybody got to have some nice food, some meals. And, of course, Thanksgiving through Christmas has always been a very strong and busy time for professional wrestling. Guys, I'd love to hear your stories about attending Thanksgiving and Christmas shows in the past, no matter what territory or promotion it is. Just shout me out on social media and tell me some of your stories. I love hearing talk of wrestling's past and would love to hear about you attending holiday cards. And speaking of Christmas, if you guys are in the mood to give me a Christmas gift, and you can even give it to me early, just go to on whatever podcast platform you listen to the show on and give me a rating and review if possible. And also be sure to recommend us to your friends and your social media followers. Word of mouth is the best networking tool. If you guys go out and give me a rating review, that helps me on those algorithms. It helps get me in front of some eyes. It only takes a few minutes, guys, and you'd be doing me a huge favor. And if you tell, you know, one of your professional wrestling history friends about us, or you just give us a shout out on, you know, a social media platform, again, it only takes a few minutes, but that has a lot of impact and on us and gets some eyes on us and helps us grow. So again, it would be greatly appreciated if you could do those things for me and help keep this ball rolling. All right, well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll have my guest, Stormy Granzig. So stick around. Phil Sundry Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over three decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend, Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. Welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty, and I'm being joined by a former WWE Heavyweight Tag Team Champion, Stormy Granzig. Stormy, how are you?
Well, I'm doing real good. It's an honor to be on your show, Dave. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I got to ask you right off the top, have you ever done a podcast before?
Well, no, I haven't.
Good. Okay.
I was a little bit off there. Sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine. I like having first-time guests, so that's exciting. And I grew up on WWE, so obviously I was a fan of Stormy Granzig. But let's talk a little bit about you. You grew up in the Wilmington, Illinois area, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and you wrestled for Wilmington High School. I saw that you placed third in your weight class your senior year, so you were quite the accomplished amateur wrestler.
Well, you know, I was okay. Yeah, that's for sure. We had a real good program, real good team, you know, so, you know, I just fit in, one of the guys.
Yeah, and when I was looking that up and I saw that, what might surprise some people, your name's actually Stormy Granzig, is it not?
It is. That is my name.
Yeah, I would assume that a lot of people would probably think, hey, that's a work name. That's something you came up with. But no, that's how did you get named Stormy?
Well, to tell you the truth, there was a family that owned Zenith Corporation with the TVs, and their son's name was Stormy McDonald. My mom just liked his name and named me Stormy. They weren't hippies, nothing, no good big time story. They liked his name and they took it from me. That's about the whole story.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I always just assumed, hey, that was some kind of work name, at least the Stormy part, at least. But no, that's your birth name. That's what's on the birth certificate. That's pretty crazy. You placed third your senior year. Did you have any interest in wrestling in college after high school?
Well, you know, I did. I went to Joliet Junior College and I qualified for the Nationals and only wrestled there 1 year. And then I never went back to the school program after that. We had a real good team. I think our team was probably ranked number one or two in the whole nation. So what happened was I don't know if you know the Joliet area at all, but a lot of good wrestling from the Chicago area. So we had like a lot of guys that like weren't real good in school, but were real good wrestlers. So we had one heck of a team, you know, to tell you the truth. And, you know, up and down, we had one guy named was Mike Evans. You know, he actually won the Nationals and the amateurs in the Greco-Roman and the freestyle. So, and then there was Greg McCullough, and he was state champion, Joey West. But anyway, the up and down the whole lineup was incredible. You know, even to make the team was felt like a state championship, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, if you look back, especially, you know, at your pro career and everything else, you've obviously, pretty much your entire life, you've been very involved in fitness and bodybuilding. Did that begin early in your life in high school with the amateur wrestling and stuff as well?
Well, that's true. And then, you know, as time went on, I have competed in the powerlifting, and strongman, arm wrestling, jiu-jitsu, you know, one thing after another, you know, in I like being competitive. So, you know, whatever. I don't know if you ever heard of Eddie Cohn, but he was the guy who trained at my gym also in powerlifting. He was, at that time, he was like the best powerlifter in the world. Squat at 1,000, deadlift at 950, and bench 725. So, I mean, I was around a lot of good people with a lot of good things going on.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the cool thing about, you know, bodybuilding and that kind of competition, it's, man, you can be competitive your entire life, right? I mean, you're still, you know, very active in bodybuilding and fitness and keeping in shape. I mean, you know, I not trying to disparage you anyway with your age, but you look absolutely great for your age. I mean, you look better than guys, you know, 20, 30 years, you're a junior.
Well, you know, I try to stay on top of it as much as I can. You know, Father Time catches up to all of us, and, you know, you're not the same guy 20, 30 years ago, but as long as I can hang in there with my own age group, you know, I have to be thankful, you know?
Yeah. So growing up, and, you know, competing in amateur wrestling and being in fitness. Were you also a fan of professional wrestling growing up at all?
Well, to tell you the truth, this is how it started, you know, because I like to be honest because you can never remember a lot, you know.
So yeah, yeah.
went to a friend's house and they were watching, at that time, they were watching the AWA. And I lived so far out in the boondocks that, you know, at that time, you're probably too young to remember this, but you had to have UHF. And my UHF.
Oh, yeah. Soon. No. I remember that. Yeah.
I went to a friend's house. They were watching wrestling. He said, "Hey, man, you know, we're going to go up to the matches up in Chicago at the amphitheater." And I said, "You know what? You know, I think that, you know, not trying to make myself sound good, but I go, you know, I think I'm in as good a shape as a lot of guys on the program. So maybe I'll go up there with you and see if I can get in." So not knowing that, you know, how hard it might be or whatever you got to do. I went up there and they said, you know, crazy as I was, I had somebody go back into the locker room. And they brought another guy out. He was from the Chicago area. His name was Bob Sabre. I don't know if you ever remember Bob Sabre, but anyway, he invited me to the school. And after I went to his school and then, you know, different promoters come by. This is back when they had all the territories and different promoters come by. And because of the shape that I was in, they gave me a chance, even though I wasn't, you know, I wasn't that good a worker. How good a worker can you really be if you've only, you know, never even had a match, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as we continue, I'll let you know what, you know, but keep go. You keep asking me questions. I'll keep filling in the blanks.
Yeah. Well, and I heard that, you know, pretty early on, right. I heard that you got invited to Vern Gagne's, to the barn or whatever, his training camp, but that you declined because you thought financially, maybe it wasn't the best decision. Is that true?
To be real honest with you, here's what it was. You know, when you start at the bottom, you're a job man, you know what I mean? Unless you're related to somebody or, you know, I mean, that pretty much you have to be related to somebody to you know, kind of get a push. Okay. So anyway, I'm at the very bottom. So I'm going wherever I can, you know, doing jobs for Bruiser, doing jobs for Gagne. And the amazing part was that one of the, you know, when I was up in the AWA, Bobby Heenan, he approached me and, you know, him and Nick Bockwinkel kind of had their own little locker room. And he was talking to Nick. He was, "Hey, man, why don't we bring Stormy around? And, you know, I like him. And, I, you know, things that be, you know, at that time, honest, Dave, I didn't really know who anybody was. So I didn't know who was a big star, who wasn't, because I'd never really watched it. So by the time I'm up there with the AWA, and, you know, they had a lot of established pretty big stars at that time. Sure. And so anyway, Bobby tried to help me out. So then I had another match, you know, with Bruiser's group. And at that time, you know, you didn't have cell phones or anything like that. So when Bobby asked me to be a part of it, you know, would I like to be a part of their group? You know, I didn't step forward fast enough because I didn't know what to do. You know, I honestly didn't even know what to do. So then Bruiser invited me over one more time. And then Spike Huber, you know, Bruiser's son-in-law.
Yep.
He was in that group. And of course, you know, we all pretty much know the story. He met a girl from Memphis. He took off with her. And then, you know, that left the championship vacant because
we'll get to that. Let's not jump the gun here on that one. I want to dive into that because that's something that we've not heard a lot about, and I really want to talk about that in a little bit. So you're doing round, right? You're doing, you know, kind of, you know, the job stuff, right? Well, a lot of guys do that, right? When you're early on, that's how you learn and everything else. Now I saw on a TV interview, now this is from a few years later with Bob Luce and the WWE, that you said, you talked about in that you were early on had used the name Stormy Winters. Did you actually use that name, or was that just a story thing for the interview?
Here's what happened. The Bruiser, you know, he was cool with the name Stormy because, you know, it was different. But he goes, "How would you like to be Stormy Winters?" Well, I don't know if they ever used it or not. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I really didn't like that, you know. So I just wanted to use my real name, you know. So I told him a story, you know, about how my dad had passed away, and it'd be nice if I could use his real, you know, my real last name and honor him. And he goes, "We're good, Dan." Bruiser said, "We're good, Dan. Don't worry, you'll be Stormy Granzig, you know, your real name." And then we just went forward from there. So I can't remember if I ever came out of Stormy Winters or not, but Bruiser did ask me about it, you know. So that's kind of how that part started, you know, if I can remember back that far, but that's pretty much how it started.
Yeah, that's how the interview portrayed it, right? That you were paying tribute to your dad and everything else. So it didn't really say for sure if there was, you know, you couldn't tell if it was a real thing or not. I don't ever recall you being Stormy Winters, but I mean, of course, you know, there's a chance. I mean,
I don't even know if I ever came out as that. The Bruiser just said, "Hey, how would you like that?" You know, but I really didn't like it. There was really no real reason to say yes or no. And, you know, back then, you know, probably looking back, you probably wouldn't be that easy to just say no to anything what Bruiser said. You know what I mean?
But
what I did, he said, "That's cool. We're good. You know, so that's how, that pretty much went from there. Then you keep going with whatever questions you have.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, I mean, you know, you work for the WWE, obviously, the AWA. Did you get to work anywhere else out in any other territories? Did you venture out anywhere?
I did just a little bit because you got to remember I was super green. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, hadn't really worked hardly anywhere. And And so Bob Sabre, he took a bunch of us to, I think it was Fairmount, Kentucky, or no, Frankfort, Kentucky, and I worked for Angelo Poffel. And of
Yeah,
course,
okay.
I didn't know who anybody was, so I didn't know Angelo, but I did meet Randy and
Yeah.
Ronnie in the locker room, not knowing that, they weren't established stars, right? Maybe in that territory they were, but other than that, they were just, two guys that I met in the locker room. They're both very nice to me, and the both of them looked like they were creditable. Like they
Yeah.
could go places if they wanted to. And I don't even know if there was anywhere to go at that time. I don't think the WWF at that time was even big time yet. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't. We'll
Yeah.
get to that part of the story. But anyway, so I met Randy and I met Lonnie, and they were real nice to me. They put me over down there. They didn't have to, but they did. And that's probably one of the other territories that, I could mention a few names that you might recognize. Otherwise, they're just little tiny, teeny territories, and. I was
Yeah.
just trying to get experience. So you keep asking the questions, I'll keep answering them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that obviously that would have been down in the ICW, right? That with the Poffos that that ran that promotion. And
You probably know better than me, probably.
And they were kind of a wild promotion. They were because they were known for taking it to Memphis and trying some outlandish things to really get some attention. But and of course Randy, I mean, he had that spark from the beginning. He had
Yeah,
that
he
it
looked like the real
factor.
deal. Yeah, he looked like he did have the it factor. As soon as I seen him in the locker room, I'm thinking, this guy's got, he has the it factor. I even told him, I said, you man, you really look the part, you look good. And he's like, thank you, I mean, but I didn't even know who I'm talking to at the time,
And then a couple of names that when we were you and I were chatting kind of offline here that you brought up some guys that tried to help you, right? And I'm assuming a lot of these were probably through some of your time working with the AWA. But you talked about you mentioned Road Warrior Animal. Tell me about Road Warrior Animal.
Okay, I'll tell you about him. Is I was at a power meet at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, and his name's Joe Animal was there, and we were both in the weight room, and he was working out, and Ellerine, I guess that was the manager of him and Hawk at the time. He was working out too, and I was thinking to myself, gee, I wonder if I can go up and maybe talk to Joe, and just see if I can break the ice with him, maybe get to know him, and maybe he can help me out or give me some advice, and I seen a couple people go up to him and they tried to ask for an autograph, and he's like, can't you see I'm working out? I'm like, uh-oh, this might not be a good idea. Then all of a sudden he looked over at me and he goes, don't I know you? And I go, yeah, I work for Bruiser. He goes, that's the worst blanket show I've ever seen. I'm like, oh, great. Now where do we go? But he goes, oh no, I'm just giving you a hard time because I really don't like Dick. So I go, okay. Well, anyway, he wanted to invite me to his house to meet Owe Anderson. I guess at that time, Owe was doing the booking up in Minneapolis. So, I didn't react fast enough to go up there. I should have went because what are the odds on, him? I know he's a real nice guy, and I know he helped a lot of other people out too. But, you wouldn't, when you look at him, you're kind of intimidated. You're like, oh man, like I said, I was afraid to even go up and talk to him after, someone tried to get his autograph. He goes, can't you see him working out? I'm like, oh God, this isn't going to go good, But then, no, then he was real friendly and start talking about it a little bit, mainly because I was muscular and he respected that. I'm sure that's how, we got to talking, and he was real good to me. At that time, nobody had like cell phones or anything like that. So, a little bit of time it had escaped me, and I was still working for Dick. And let me think. Well, like I said, he tried to help me. I don't want to skip around too much. And then I also, when I was working in Chicago for this Windy City Wrestling, I don't know if you remember them. I think it was Sam.
Sam DeCero.
That's right. Yeah, well, me and Sam used to ride together, and so anyway, so I'm up there, and Paul Heyman he was a manager there, and Heyman was, he was a manager. He wasn't a big time yet either, and he was a manager up there, and he was managing the guy that I was working with, so anyway, so going from there, then I went to a WCW or NWA match, and I saw Paul there. He goes, hey, Stormy, he goes, hey, if you need me to talk to the front office for you, let me know. And I didn't take advantage of that either. Which, I'm not so sure, how much he reaches out to people. I mean, I don't know him that well. You might know him better than me, but that was awfully nice of him to say that. He just saw me. He goes, hey, you need me, if you need me to talk to the front office for you, I will, So I thought, wow, that's pretty big of him, because he was just starting to become kind of a bigger name, But he was real nice. And I never forgot it. That's why, I mention it now.
Well, of course, Paul. I love Paul Heyman. I'm a big fan of Paul Heyman. But of course, he is known for mixing some half truths and things. So I don't know how much pull he would have had. Who knows? It's hard telling with Paul Heyman sometimes.
Yeah, well, he stepped up. You know, he stepped up and said that. I didn't ask him to help me or anything. He just
yeah,
said,
yeah, yeah.
And he talked to the front office for I will, you know, and he was getting a little push. So I thought, hey,
yeah,
maybe he does,
yeah.
You know, he may have a little pull there, you know.
Yeah. And you talked about Animal not liking Bruce. I'm sure that some of that stemmed from in the AWA, the Road Warriors, I think, wrestled the Bruiser and Crusher. And I don't think they were too happy because, you know, obviously Bruiser and Crusher were a little older and they didn't really sell. They didn't
That's
really
right.
sell. And I don't, you know, the Road Warriors weren't used to that at the time being the young guys. So, you know,
right.
I am the world's biggest Dick the Bruiser fan. Love Dick the Bruiser, but
cool,
not he.
Cool.
He's not known for passing the torch too much over the years.
Yeah, you know what? I bet you hit the nail right on the head because I would say that would be the reason that, you know, he didn't want to sell. I remember a few guys saying when they got back to the locker room after they wrestled Bruiser, going, "Man, I scratched him in the eyes. He must have steel eyeballs." You know,
yeah.
I guess, you know, scratch of the eye. You know, like, he must have steel eyeballs. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm originally from Indiana, and Dick the Bruiser is, you know, next to God in Indiana. But I
That's
think he
right.
thought that extended everywhere. And I don't, you know, I love Dick the Bruiser. Like I said, I love Dick the Bruiser. But you know, he, yeah, sometimes was his worst enemy. But you know, that's the same thing. But you also mentioned Scott Hall, that you were pretty good friends with Scott Hall, and I'm assuming you probably met him again. Probably around that AWA time when Scott was just kind of getting started.
I'll tell you how I kind of met Scott, but I'm gonna back up for a second here with let me think real quick here. Okay, with Bruiser and them and Animal, but I'll jump to Scott. That's okay. But how I met Scott was I opened
go
the
ahead.
Gym. And,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Whatever you say, Dave. I opened a gym in Orlando. I didn't open it. I actually inherited a gym. Well, not inherited it that way, but. A guy that owned the gym, he wasn't as successful there because he didn't personal train anybody and he had to pay people to work there. So if I could work there and do the personal training, I could actually make more money than he could. So he gave me an opportunity. It was called Orange Avenue Gym. It was very famous at the time because it was a gym that opened up like in the 1950s and was still alive. And down here in Orlando, you probably wouldn't know the name, but a guy named Dr. Phillips, he gave them a 50-year lease. And then he went on vacation and he ended up getting murdered. You know, so then that was the end of that lease. But then I opened up a couple different places. But anyway, so Scott and me, you know, Scott was, he was a member there at Orange Avenue Gym. So I got to meet all the people that he originally came from Maryland with. You know, there were so many buddies that came on down. And then, you know, he was working at the Dowell House. But he was already established start by the time I met him. But Scott, he was real nice to everybody. And everybody could really approach him. He was just a real good guy. And I remember, you know, different things with Scott, you know, he had a few demons here and there too. But anyway, he was real cool. I remember him asking me one time, he said, "Hey, Stormy, you know, I've got a real big house. How would you like to move in there with me? You know, it's so big that we wouldn't even cross a path. You know, things would be real cool." And I said, "Well, that's really nice." I said, but he lived a little bit away from the gym, you know, like about 15, 20 miles. He lived in, what was it called? Chiliota. And so anyway, I said, "Well, let me think about it, Scott." And he goes, "Well, this part, you know, kind of, it was kind of heartbreaking actually when he said it's nothing super bad, but he goes, "Well, Stormy, would it help if I told you I was lonely?" And I'm thinking, well, how could Scott Hall be lonely? You know what I mean? This is in between, I guess he had some time off or whatever, you know. So I go, "Oh no, don't say that." But anyway, that's the kind of guy he was. He was good to everybody, real nice to everybody. And, you know, he people love Scott, you know that, you know, just people that, you know, that weren't even around him, you know, that just ran into him here and there. And, you know, I never met Kevin Nash or some of his better friends, you know, and all, but you know, just being around Scott. And then, you know, Scott, he was always real nice. He always reached out to me and treated me, I guess, because I was also kind of a wrestler. So he kind of, you know, treated me like another fellow wrestler, you know? So that's pretty much, I'd say, what my story with Scott, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you also mentioned, obviously, Hulk Hogan and Jesse Ventura, which I'm guessing, does that obviously from the gym and bodybuilding days?
Well, you know what, up in the AWA, I tell you what, you know, they threw me in there with a bunch of guys right away, and I almost had to go against Hogan. Just the thing is that about 5 minutes before the match, I was going to do a job, of course, about 5 minutes before the match, they decided not to put me in there with Hogan because I looked like too much of a baby face, and it looked like he was beating up another baby face, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, they switched that part around. So, but anyway, in the locker room, I remember Hogan walking by me, and he stopped for a second, goes, "Hey, nice body, brother." You know, so that, you know, coming from him. And of course, he wasn't a huge star yet. You know, he just had just did that role. He just played Thunder Lips in the Rocky movie. You know, he was getting there. You know what I mean? And but I thought that was really nice of the guy, because he was one of the bigger guys on the card. You know, him to just stop and say, "Hey, nice body, brother." You know, and thought, well, that's cool. And then I did have to wrestle, you know, someone like David Schultz or Jesse, you know, the whole group that was up there in the AWA at that time. So, you know, you're doing a job. But I remember working with Jesse, and after the match, he said to me, "Hey, Stormy, next time you and me work," he goes, "you take more of the matches. I'll sell for you." You know, I'm pretty big of him to say that, you know, because he was already a big star, I mean, and, you know, so that was the guy. And then he eventually became governor. You know, you kind of remember back how some people treated you when you were at the bottom, and they were kind of at the top. You know, some people don't treat people the same if they're on top and you're at the bottom. You know, they treat you like you are at the bottom, you know what I mean? But, you know, I never forgot that he was that nice. And everybody else that I worked with, even like David Schultz, you hear different things about him. But he was real cool with me in the match, and wrestled Ken Patera. And, you know, you know the lineup that was up there at the time.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, anywhere you want to go with this story, I'll follow you, Dave.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Bobo Brazil, because obviously Bobo, legendary name, right, in the scope of professional wrestling. I mean, but he was obviously very prominent in the Midwest, worked a lot for Bruiser. And obviously there you cross paths with him a lot, teamed with him, I'm sure, a lot. But I've talked to lots of guys from the WWA that talked about how Bobo was just, he was one of those guys, man, that was just so down to earth, would help everybody out, was so kind. Tell us about your time knowing Bobo Brazil.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bobo was just like you just said, you know, and plus he was like a real well-dressed man. You know what I mean? He was real fancy clothes, and just, you know, he was just like he just always looked like he was on top of his game. You know what I mean? He had that, you know, he just, like I said, he outdressed everybody, and super classy guy, nice to everybody. And he was already a big name and all that, but he treated everybody as an equal, and he didn't have to, and he treated me really good. And I remember one story I want to tell you real quick is that one time his wife only packed one of his boots, his wrestling boots, in his suitcase. So anyway, I said, you know, after my match, his match was coming up, I said, "Well, tell you what," I said, "you think you can wear my boots?" Or I don't know if we borrowed a pair of boots from somebody or he wore my boots. But anyway, so we were hurrying up as fast as we can, because he only had one boot. So I'm, you know, he's putting one boot on it, and I'm lacing up the other boot for him. And Bruiser walks by and he goes, "Oh, I've seen everything now." You know, and then the Bobo started, I guess, meaning that, you know, here I am putting this guy's boot on. You know what? I didn't want to say all that. You know, Bruiser's like, "Oh, I've seen everything now."
Yeah.
And so helping Bruiser. Bobo get ready as fast as he can to get out there, you know what I mean? So, but I don't know, Bruce was just giving us a hard time. I don't think he had anything by it, but but anyway, that made me feel good being able to step up as fast as I could and try to help Bobo out, because like you said, that, you know, I don't think anybody ever had a bad thing to say about Bobo. He was just a real good guy, and, you know, everybody loved Bobo, you know, and he had that coconut butt, is that what his move was or whatever?
Yeah.
You remember that thing? So that was like a little story that I can remember with Bobo, because it was kind of funny, you know, because Bruiser walked by, you know, "I've seen everything now." Yeah. You know, Bobo, he just started laughing. He just, you know, but anyway, that's how it was.
Well, I hear all kinds of people, right, that don't understand, right? They talk about, a lot of people from the outside look at the WWA and they, "Oh, you have guys like Bobo and Bruiser and Moose Cholak and these guys that were, well, you're so old and well past their prime, still rest." And as someone who's from Indiana, I thought, yeah, you know what, but man, those guys still drew. I mean, people still wanted to go see those guys, and maybe they weren't their prime, but these guys were huge names in that Midwest Indiana area. I mean, like I said, I'm from Central Indiana. Everybody, wrestling fan or not, knew who Dick the Bruiser and Bobo Brazil was, and Moose Cholak for that matter. And it's, so I don't, a lot of people don't understand how big these guys were in the Midwest.
Well, they were, and Moose was a big name still, you know, even though, you know, I got a little bit of a push, I wasn't the star really, you know, and I knew that for sure, you know, and Moose, we tag teamed a couple of times, and it was really an honor to be a tag team partner with Moose, because that's something I could say that, you know, that I wasn't, you know, but I remember one time there was these two big guys that are called the Samoans, and you probably wouldn't even know who they were, but before the match, Moose was like, "Oh man, they look pretty big. They look, you know," because, you know, Moose in his 50s, and these guys were kind of green near, like, in their 20s. You know, I think Moose was thinking, "Oh man, you know, what's going to happen here?" And I go, "Don't worry, Moose, I got this." You know, I mean, when I say that, I'm not saying it like I'm bragging or anything like that. But, you know, I want Moose to know that I got his back, and they probably can't wrestle as good as me. They might be big, but, you know, they're probably just bodybuilders, you know what I mean? And if something happens, I'll out wrestle. And I did, and then they woke up, you know, they knew that, you know, not to get stiff with me. And, that, you know, I've had to say things to a few people in there. But anyway, so Moose was so happy after the match, and they did an interview with him and say, no, Stormy, you know, he's so athletic. And, you know, he really put me over because I had his back. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't going to let anybody try to hurt Moose or anything. Like, he's well up in the... But, yeah, no, he was a big star. You're right. Everything you're saying, it absolutely is right, you know, for sure.
And you mentioned it earlier, but let's talk about it. Because this is a very fascinating point in time in the WWE, right? In 1984, Spike Huber was married to Dick the Bruiser's daughter, and he was the WWE champion. Then, right, he had the falling out with Dick the Bruce's daughter. I think he actually just took off, right, went to Memphis or something, left Indiana, whatever it may be. Of course, Bruiser took the title off of him because he wasn't around. And he put it on you. And they claimed publicly, right, that you beat Spike for it, but there was never really a match, right, that happened. Do you remember?
Yeah, they said that, you know, go ahead. Keep going, Dave.
No, I was going to say, from your side, tell us about that, how you found out about that and when they found out about. And that they were giving you the belt and all this and that, because right from our side, you know, back in that day, you hear it, you just take it for granted. That's true, right? You beat Spike. Obviously, it wasn't. But tell us about your side on the inside. What was that whole situation like?
Well, as far as in the locker room goes, you know, everybody loves Spike. You know what I mean? And you know, the crowd loves Spike. The people in the locker room love Spike. Even though he was Bruiser's son-in-law, he never held that against anybody. Like, he had one up on everybody because he was related to Dick.
Yeah.
But anyway, from what I hear, that, you know, I don't know what the whole situation was, why he wasn't happy or whatever. I don't know the whole story exactly, but what was the final? But anyway, I know that him and Steve Regal went down to Memphis to work or whatever, and they met these girls or whatever. Spike, I guess he kind of fell for this girl. You know what I mean? It wasn't because that he still didn't love Michelle, because he had children with Michelle and everything like that. But I think Bruiser was really hard on Spike. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think he, you know, maybe didn't treat him as good as Spike would have liked to have been treated to. You know, like, he had a button in his house that went to Spike's house on an intercom, go, come on over and clean my pool. Come over and do this and come over and do that. So I guess Spike got tired of having to being, you know, he had to jump. When Bruiser said, and of course, you know, Bruiser had done a lot for Spike since he was young, so he kind of felt obligated to him. But at the same time, you know, I think that he felt like he was being taken advantage of. So when the time came, you know, he took off and he met this girl from Memphis, and I didn't really know a whole lot about her. And then I remember him, he stayed in touch with me because, you know, we hit it off because of the working out and being in shape and everything. So Bruiser didn't know that Spike and me had actually hit it off, you know what I mean? He had no idea of that part of it. And, I remember him saying that, hey, you know, have you met Michelle before? And I go, no, I never met her. He goes, well, there's a picture of you on Michelle's fireplace, you know, and he Bruiser said that you gave that to her. And I'm like, no, I didn't give that picture. I've never even met Michelle, you know what I mean? Because she wasn't around, you know, she wasn't around any of that. So anyway, he goes, okay, I figured that anyway. I go, yeah, I've never even met the girl, you know what I mean? So I guess Bruiser was just trying to kind of dig into Spike a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, he could be replaced, you know what I mean? So anyway, next thing you know, there was a real bad snowstorm, and Bruiser called me and said, hey, man, come on down to Indianapolis, you know, for an interview. You know, I was still doing the jobs then, really, you know. And he said, come on down to Indianapolis, do an interview. And he goes, I'm going to make you one of my champions, you know. And I'm like, oh, wow, I don't know what kind of champion he's going to make me, but, hey, he's going to do something for me. So, you know, I'm going down there, big blizzard going on, and I can only make it halfway to Indiana. And I pull over at this, I guess, the weigh stations or whatever they are. And I'm like, I think I used the phone at a weigh station. I said, Dick, you know, I don't think I can make it. You know, the snow's so bad and the roads are closed down. He goes, go back home. He goes, what's wrong with you, man? All the roads are closed. So, you know, I went back home and And then I came back, you know, again when the roads were cleared out. And he decided he was going to, you know, I guess he's going to take the belt from Spike and give it to me. And on TV, he told everybody that I beat Spike in Kansas City. And I'm like, well, you know, back then they couldn't really, you know, they didn't know how to prove that was true or not. Because, you know, like, you could do an interview in one day. You could be in Terre Haute doing an interview saying you had this match with, I don't know, whoever it was, J.R. Hogg or Jip or Valiant or somewhere. It could be any of those guys. And then you do it. Then you do another. We do the tapings at the Indianapolis TV station there, Channel 6, I think it was.
Yep.
So then you would do another match. You'd do another interview saying the championship match was against this guy or that guy, or it's going to be in Terre Haute, or it's going to be in Fort Wayne. But it was, you know, it was the same thing over and over. And back then, you could get away with that because, you know, they didn't know how to know that, you know, I thought you were having a title match in Terre Haute. you know, then I'm doing another interview right after that, you know, a couple of seconds later, and I'm telling them I got a title match in Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the very beginning, I was so green that, you know, a lot of people hated me in the locker room because, you know, they figured that they wanted to be the champion or they wanted the belt. You know, I didn't know how important it was. And I didn't know these guys were even big stars at the time because, like I said, I only watched one TV show and only had six matches under my belt. And yeah. Bruiser made me the champ. So I was pretty nervous about everything. You know, eating another guy named Jeff Van Camp. And of course, you know who Jeff is.
Yep.
I noticed that he had a big bottle of Rolaids in his suitcase. And I had a bottle in my suitcase. I go, man, how come you have all those Rolaids? He goes, because I got heartburn because I'm so nervous. I go, me too. You know, so anyway, we're both, pretty nervous. And they kind of had to, well, the best they could, they had to kind of carry me. I'm not going to speak for Jeff, but they had to carry me through the match. So they would talk me through, you know what I mean? Even because I only had six matches and I'm a champ, you know, so they had pretty much just talk me through, you know, in every match. And I had to just listen because I figured no matter what I was going to add to the match wasn't as good as what they were going to, you know, how they were going to call the match. So, you know, they put me over as much as they could. And then you had to trust everybody because if this guy's talking to me and he's got to put me over, he doesn't, you know, he could beat me up all night long. And then, you know, then they could get disqualified and they didn't look bad. And I didn't look that good, you know what I mean? But they treated me, real, you know, everybody that was there, and you know who they all were, and they just they talked to me throughout the whole match, and then I got a lot of trouble. I don't want to jump too far ahead. They brought Bruiser brought Harley Race into town, Harley was going to wrestle me, you know, for the belt, which I know he wasn't going to take the belt because he wasn't going to stick around in that territory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I just went up to Harley before the match. I hope I'm not jumping too far out there.
No, because, no, no. You know, Go ahead.
Anyway, so we're in the locker room, Bruiser goes, this is Harley, you know, and I barely even knew who Harley Race was, you know, because I wasn't a big fan or anything. I'd only watched that one show and went up to the amphitheater. And so anyway, he said, this is Harley. You know, I heard of him a little bit because back then things weren't as big as they were now. They were in the magazine or whatever, but, you know, they weren't, you know, nationwide like they are now, or, you know, all this wasn't as big. But anyway, he introduced me to Harley. You know, I go up to Harley and, you know, I know enough about Harley to know that he was an established star. Mm-hmm. So I went up to Harley and I said, look, I don't really think there's much I can add to the match. You know, maybe, you know, why don't you just call the whole match and then I'll just follow you. You know, that's why some people complained about it. Oh, poor Harley, you know what I mean? But, you know, but I let him just call the whole match because I figured what could I add to the match that Harley couldn't?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So he goes, that's what you want to do? And I said, yeah, that's what I want to do. He goes, okay, then that's what we'll do. So then after the match, you know, he was real nice to me, and I think we even had a strap match on top of it. I'm like, oh, geez, now we're going to add this to the match. And I already got to Harley. So anyway, so, okay, so, that you know, we get done working. Of course, you know, Harley gets disqualified, you know, so it looks like I keep the belt, you know, and I can't remember if I got disqualified or he got disqualified. Somebody got disqualified, but he wasn't, you know, of course, he didn't want the belt. He just came there for a payday. But when he got done that night, he said, hey, Stormy, you know, we probably won't see each other ever again. I go, why is that? He goes, well, because Bruiser, he didn't treat me right on my payoff or my payday or my pay or whatever you called it, you know. So I never saw Harley again. But at least I did get to work with him. You know, it's like just like if you worked with Harley, at least you worked with a legend. You know, and you could say that, you know, I did work with Harley Race. And I'd just say he's one of the bigger names that were in the sport back then for sure. And even now, people still remember Harley. And you probably remember Harley better than me, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the greatest of all time. And so when Spike left, what was Bruiser saying? Was he saying anything in the locker room? Because I know Bruiser doesn't mince words, you know, never mince words. Was he talking Spike down or anything in the locker room? Was he bad-mouthing Spike?
No, not really. You know, he really didn't say too much about it because you got to remember, you know, those were Spike's kids, were his grandkids and all. So he wasn't going to pull them off the bus or anything like that. And, I don't think he really ever addressed it, but other people in the locker room kind of knew what happened. And then you got to remember, I'd kind of become friends with Spike at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Bruiser didn't even know that me and Spike hit it off, you know. So, he stayed in touch with me and told me how he had met a girl down there. And, you know, and that was probably about, you know, but no, Bruiser really, he wasn't throwing him under the bus. He really didn't say it. I think that was private, you know, that was more of a family matter.
Yeah.
And, and the only reason I knew a little bit about it was because Spike called me. And also because, you know, some of the people in the locker room knew more than I did, you know, what had really happened. But then, like I said, you know, at first I had a lot of trouble in the locker room because a lot of people, they didn't like me at all because they figured that I was handed something that I didn't deserve And you know, and truthfully, you know, that was the truth. I was handed something that I didn't deserve, but I don't know if Bruiser thought he would be getting back with Spike a little bit more if he put me on top, you know, because of my physique, you know, or that he thought that might bother Spike more. I really don't know why he decided to choose me. Or he thought that the, you know, he told everybody in the locker room, hey, don't be put being so hard on Stormy, because, you know, if the crowd likes him, we all make more money. You know, he tried to talk to them all, and then, you know, for a while there, you yeah, remember people that thought I beat Spike, they were booing me like crazy. Bruiser even had to come up to the ring a few times because trying to settle the crowd down, because, you know, they're like, you know. But it only took about 3 or 4 months, you know, before the crowd started to accept me, because everybody likes a winner. And they, now I'm the champ, you know, now they're just going to accept it. But yeah, at first, man, they were booing hard and heavy, and, you know, I beat the guy that they loved, or according to them. You know,
right.
I beat the guy that they loved, and, you know, so, you know, I was dodging bullets in the locker room. They hated me because, you know, like, I got a push that I didn't deserve, and that was true. And then the fans didn't like me because I beat their hero, you know, so Jesus, I had, as time went on, you know, slowly but surely, you know, you got to win the locker room over, and they realized that, you know, I'm in a position that I didn't put myself in. I'm in that position, you know, it wasn't my fault. And little by little, got to be more friendly with, you know, everybody that was in there, you know, El Bizarro, Colt, J.R. Hogg, you know, all of them, really, you know. And I traveled mostly with Jeff Van Camp. I know you interviewed Jeff because I heard that interview. You know? You know, because he played college football and I wrestled in college, you know. We're both more into sports, you know, and some people are more like athletes and some more entertainers, you know what I mean? So me and him hit it off, and, you know, me and him pretty much rode together all the time. You know what I mean? So he was a good friend of mine at the time. And I remember you interviewing him, and he was talking about, well, there was a tag team match. And he goes, with Stormy. And he goes, oh, do you know Stormy? You know, and I heard him pause for a second. You know?
Jeff's such a great guy.
He's just a nice guy. And the crowd really liked him. The crowd loved him because he came out when we both got there. He was Bruiser's tag team partner. That opened the door, you know, where people really liked Jeff. And they, even though they disliked me, they liked Jeff, you know what I mean? But me and Jeff we worked out together, we traveled together, we got along real good, you know, for whatever reason. You know, sometimes you just gravitate towards somebody that you hit it off with.
Sure. It's such a funny business, right? Because things are predetermined, right? So locker room is mad at Stormy Granzig because he's the champion, even though Stormy Granzig had absolutely no factoring into that, right? That was Bruiser, and but yet they're mad at Stormy Granzig. It's such an odd business sometimes.
Well, and I understood why they were, you know, had a little resentment. They thought I was into something, and, you know, they wanted, some of them wanted to be the champ, or they thought they should be next. And if anybody should have been next, it probably should have been Wojo at that time, you know, because he was going up against Spike, you know, one match after another. And it would have been more logical that they would have put the strap on him. Why they didn't, I think he was digging into Spike a little bit, you know, by using me, my body, by this, that, you know, kind of sticking it to Spike a little. I think that's how the opportunity came for me. It had to be, because I'd only had like 6 matches.
I mean, that the Bruiser was trying to say, oh, hey, you know, Spike, we can replace you with another guy with a good body. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it is what it is. And, but, you know, speaking of Wojo, right, that's who you ended up dropping the belt to. And
we had a lot of matches with Wojo. And, you know, of course, Graham, you know, he managed Wojo.
Yeah.
You know, he was another one. You know, both those two were very, very, very talented. You know, Graham could have been a manager in the big time anywhere, really. You know, and I don't know why he didn't get an opportunity. Maybe, you know, I think his family had a business, too. Maybe he couldn't take
he,
off.
He did. Graham got a tryout in WWF, and he went up there for TV taping, but it was very weird because when they did interviews, they told him not to really say anything, let the wrestlers talk. So it's like they didn't even utilize him. I'm pretty good friends with Jerry, and Jerry is one of the smartest minds in professional wrestling that a lot of people don't know. He is just remarkable. And then also, I mean, Wojo, such an unheralded talent, right? Because, I mean, he's got the amateur background and an Olympian, amateur, whatever, you know, just, he's a legit guy that you don't want to cross because he's a legit tough guy. Yeah. But yet, I mean, again, I interviewed Wojo, and he's so soft spoken. And everybody, no one has a cross word about Wojo because Wojo could rip you apart, but yet he was just such a, see, everybody that I talked to say Wojo was such a gentleman.
That's for sure. And like again, Jerry was a great manager, and I think he really helped Wojo get into the business quite a bit. To tell you, I guess they maybe they had an amateur background together a little bit, where they both knew each other from the amateur wrestling, and I think that's how they knew each other, what I'd heard a little bit about that. But yeah, Graham, I was always surprised that he didn't get a chance, and why they wouldn't let him talk up in New York, because that's one of his greatest assets is how good he talked. Not that he wasn't good in the ring. He was good in the ring too. He was good everywhere. So he was legitimate all the way, and Wojo was legitimate. And yeah, I'm oh, here's what I was really surprised about, that why Vern Gagne didn't really grab Wojo. I don't know what the whole thing was behind that, but he would have seemed like a perfect fit, because
Absolutely.
Vern was a big time amateur wrestler. And who I don't who could you pick more than Wojo if you're going to pick somebody? He had everything. He had the good look. He had the body. He was strong. He had everything. And that's kind of surprised me, that happened. And like I said, Jerry was a great manager. I don't know why they didn't give him an opportunity, to tell you the truth. It puzzled me, to be honest with you. Yeah.
It's so odd. I'm such big fans of both those guys. And speaking of Graham, I'm a huge fan of Jerry Graham Jr. and Don Kent as a tag team, because I love Don Kent.
Oh
I
yeah,
think
yeah,
I
another
think
stable guy in the locker room, real good guy, just a great
yep.
worker. All these guys were really good workers, way better workers than me for sure. You know what I mean? And yeah, there's another one, Don Kent for sure. And then Chris Carter, I think Jerry, I think he kind of helped him quite a bit, and he was a great worker. A lot of those guys, there's a lot of good workers there, much better than me for sure. But I blended in enough to, not make the match look bad for sure, because a lot of them carried me, and after a while of getting carried, you start to learn a little bit more, but I still
Sure.
follow. I mean, even like with Wojo, I mean, we had good, we had, I thought we had put some pretty good matches, to be honest with you, in time, even when he took the belt from me, it was a cage match. And I remember I said, hey, if I climb to the top of the cage, can you catch me? And he's like, I got you, man. So I must have climbed, because me being not, I'm not like real, I couldn't talk that good and couldn't do this real good, but I gave the crowd, I mean, I worked hard, and I gave them, a lot of things that were more explosive, like even climbing to the top of the cage like three or four times during the match, and Wojo catching me every time. I mean, just, I had to do something more daring, because I wasn't that great of a worker. So I had to stand out in a different way. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And you mentioned Chris Carter. That's where I was kind of going next, because you also held the tag titles in 85 with Chris Carter. What do you remember about that reign and teaming with Chris Carter?
Not a whole lot, except Chris, again, he was the more talented one of the two of us. And I pretty much followed him, and whatever, kind of like whatever Jerry said and whatever Chris said, I kind of followed, because there was nothing I could add to either anything that they didn't know or that they knew. So I pretty much just tried to blend in as much as I could, and not make things look bad. You know what I mean? That was my number one goal, is to make sure that everybody's happy, the crowd's happy, the everybody in the locker room's happy, and everybody treated me good. And Chris Carter, yeah, he was another guy. I don't know why he didn't get a chance somewhere else either, because he was very talented.
Again, I will always say that Chris Carter is one of the most underappreciated talents ever in wrestling. He was I've seen him work face, I've seen him work heel. He was good on the, good in the ring, good on the mic. He was just
Everything.
I don't know whether it's, I don't know, being the 80s, he didn't have the body to go a little further, maybe. I don't know. But I've interviewed Chris. I consider Chris a friend too, and he's just, man, he is such a great mind for wrestling. He's one of those guys that maybe, I don't know, 10 or 20 years earlier, he would have been a lot bigger, I think, maybe than what he was. I don't know. It's hard to say sometimes.
No, you're all the way right, Dave. Everything you've said, you're right about all of this. Sometimes it's puzzling why somebody doesn't get an opportunity. Like Carter, no doubt. Like me and him were together, he was the lead. You know what I mean? I just had to make sure that I didn't make anybody else look bad. And Jerry, he great mind in the wrestling, and just everything that you can think of. But why he didn't get it, or even then Wojo, those three. I think those three traveled together, didn't they?
Yeah, they were all real tight, and then when kind of when the WWA kind of moved to Toledo, and Jerry kind of headed it up a little more. Those guys were heavily involved, Carter and Wojo and Graham, and doing some of that. Well, first it went to Detroit, then Toledo, but yeah, those that was kind of the nucleus of that group, and there's some good stuff there. And as kind of WWA kind of like I said, phased over to that, you kind of moved into Florida, right? You worked some in Florida there in kind of the early 90s.
Yeah,
I remember.
oh, go ahead. Keep going,
No,
Dave.
I remember seeing some stuff where you were even calling yourself Mr. Orlando. And
Well, I
tell us
actually
about that time in Florida.
won a small bodybuilding contest, the Orlando, the Mr. Orlando. It was a real
Oh, I
small
got you.
contest.
Okay, there you
Yeah,
go.
so that's why one of the promoters, one of them called me Big Guns. It wasn't anything I came up with. Then another one called me Mr. Orlando because I won this real tiny bodybuilding contest. Now it sounds big because Orlando is kind of big, but it
Sure.
was a very, very small show, very small contest, but it sounded like it was bigger than it was, because there's a lot of good bodybuilders down here in Florida for sure.
Sure,
And
yeah.
what happened really with me just kind of stepping back a little bit, I had an opportunity to get that gym, and my mom had moved down here from Chicago, and she'd already had two or three heart attacks, and she had cancer, and somebody in the family always has to step up and be the caretaker. And in my family, I took care, I'm the one that was there for my dad until he passed away. And then with my mom, I was there for her, it was an honor to be a caretaker for both of them. I'd have had to live be 150 to repay them for as great a parents as they were.
Yeah.
So I was very fortunate to have good parents. Not everybody can say that. I didn't even want to, leave home when I hit 18. A lot of kids are like, "Oh man, I can't wait to get out of here." I
Yeah.
was like, "No, man, I'm so happy here. I got a good mom and dad." They didn't have me till they were in their 40s, so they kind of were like grandparents to me. You know what I mean? And the grandparents
Yeah.
always kind of baby the grandkid more than they did the kids,
Yeah.
Yeah. But let me jump
Yeah.
back for 1 second to Bobby Heenan.
Sure.
I don't know. Did you know how Heenan kind of started with Bruiser? He was cutting his grass. He was selling popcorn at the
Yeah.
mall. Yeah,
Yeah,
well,
carrying the
I didn't
coats
know.
back and stuff. Yeah, and
Yeah,
everything.
he started at the bottom kind of too, so I just wanted to make sure that, and he pulled, and now, he's not here. What a shame. You know what I mean? I guess
Yeah.
he got cancer. Would he have throat cancer? Is that what happened to Bobby?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what he had. And yeah,
Yeah.
Bobby is my favorite wrestling talent of all time. I think he
Well,
is the greatest wrestling talent of all time, because not, I mean, the greatest talker, greatest manager. But for those who didn't get to see him, he was such an amazing worker. He could bump and work
he
beyond what
was
you thought.
great
Yeah.
worker. Oh, I've seen him work before, and he was a great worker. He could do it all. And I heard that
Yep.
interview, you and Jim Brunzell, and how
Yeah.
Jim Brunzell said that Bobby was, one of the greatest minds of professional wrestling. And
Yeah.
that really meant something to me because, Jim, he'd been around a lot of big timers, and to
Yep.
say that about Bobby, that really meant a lot. When he said that, I'm like, wow, man, that really says a lot,
Yeah.
about Heenan. And what a good guy. He tried to help me out. Like I said, Bruiser gave me an opportunity at that time. And I don't even know what kind of money they were making up there in the AWA back then. I don't know. You probably know better than me. Were they making any money at all? Because Hogan was there and all these guys were there. Bockwinkel was there. I don't know what kind of. Do you have any
Yeah,
idea what they're making at all?
they were doing pretty good. Probably better than with Bruiser. That's kind of why Bobby kind of split with Bruiser, was over money.
I would say.
Yeah, because it all there was a whole show in Indianapolis with Bruiser and Sheik, and Bobby was involved, and it did really, really well. And Bobby didn't get any kind of bump in payday, and he kind of got pissed off and said, "Well, you know what? Forget this. If we draw this kind of house, and you can't give me a little more, I'm going to just go to Vern full time." And it's the funny thing is, Dick the Bruiser was such a legend in Indianapolis, but you're only as good as your top heel. And I don't, Bobby Heenan was that guy for Dick the Bruiser for so long. I mean, that's who, no matter who he was managing or what he was doing, people wanted to see Bruiser get his hands on Heenan. And and so I understand that, right? Like I said, I love Dick the Bruiser, but I'm not so blind that I can't say that there were some faults there. But
Yeah.
it is what it is, right? I mean, Bruiser, he what he had to work with, right? But he did draw a big house that show with Market Square Arena, and he didn't pay Bobby any more than just a normal show. And I understand Bobby being slighted by that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I guess a little bit before I got there, they were still drawing really big crowds, you know, like a Market Square Arena and everything like that. So that was pretty big. You know, that was big. And yeah, you know, sometimes you got to take care of the people that you know that people come to see. And Bobby had to be one of them. You know, I wasn't there when Bobby was there, but you know, just watching him in the AWA and then going on to the WWF or whatever, you know, he no doubt was a super talent. You know what I mean? And someone you can enjoy. And about Bruiser, you know, a lot of people might not have known Bruiser that well, but the truth is, he was a real nice guy, and he was a funny guy. You know, people didn't know that he had humor. He came off as a tough guy. You know what I mean? But he had a good sense of humor, and he was nice, and he was nice to me. And no, he was the boss. There was no doubt about it. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, he was nice to people, and he had a sense of humor, and I like Dick. You know, I have a lot of respect for him, and you know, like. I've heard you say there was that with the WWA, there was a lot of talent there, but you know, we weren't really as noticed as other talent in other territories. You know, even though some other territories did invite me over, you know, like one in Texas invited me there, and a guy named Owens invited me to come out to Portland or whatever. Do you remember Owens out there
Don
in
Owens,
Portland?
Don Owens,
Yeah. He said, "Hey, if you come on out," he said, "you know, I can't make it a champion or anything." He said, "but I'll put you over and I'll put you in the middle of the card." You know, that was pretty nice. I didn't really. You know, I wasn't in the business that long. He wanted to help me. I mean, the Sheepherders wanted to help me out in Texas. I guess they had a little territory down there. I don't know if you remember them at all. And,
Yeah,
but anyway,
it's funny 'cause a lot of people they don't it's like they don't have the big picture on things, right? I mean, they see WWA in the 80s and they think, "Oh, it's you know, older guys." But it was more of a sign of the business in general than just Bruiser's business, right? It was already the business was already changing. And territories were already drying up. It wasn't just a Bruiser thing. It was a wrestling in general thing. And people often forget that, like in the 70s and into the early 80s, up into the mid 80s, the WWA, one of the biggest promotions in the country, one of the biggest territories in the country, and they drew so big, and Dick the Bruiser contributed so much to wrestling, and not only for himself, but I mean, you know, guys like the Blackjacks and the Valiants and all these guys that got the Bobby Heenan, they got their start with him. You know, so there's a bad rap because they only see limited stuff sometimes. They don't get the full picture. And again, it's in the by the time you get to the mid 80s, the business was just changing because of cable TV and so many other things. It wasn't just a Dick the Bruiser thing. It was just a entertainment thing in general and a wrestling thing in general that w it was changing. So
And Vince was taking over the WWF, and you know, they were taking the talent from each and every territory coming up there. But then it kind of killed every other territory, because if you want to see your star, then you had to wait for the WWF to come into town. You know, whoever Vojo is the guy you want to see, or well, I'm, you know, mention anybody, but if you want to see that establish a star in your territory, you know, that person probably went to the WWF. So then you had to wait for them to come to town to see your star, and then it kind of then the attendance started going down further and further and further until the territory was pretty much dead, you know.
But it's even like when you talk Bruiser though, the attendance, well, yeah, while it wasn't like, you know, 10,000 or whatever, like it was in the 70s, it was still drawing, you know, 1,000 plus to a lot of shows. It was not by today's standards what you would think of dying. It was still doing okay. It was just changing.
It was changing. Everything you're saying is correct. And Bruiser was still, he was the draw. You know, people came to see Dick, and then the rest of us, you know, we did the best we could, but people still came to see Dick. You know, so he was the draw. There's no doubt about it. He was he Even when I was a champion, Bruiser was always the main event. You know, I was a semi main event, which is good, being a semi main event, you know, waiting for Dick to carry the load. You know what I mean? Because I don't know if I could have, I don't know much, you know. Unless I had to go, you know, when there was a cage match, then they put me at the end. But other than that, you know, I was so happy that Dick was carrying the load, you know, and he did. And
And
what
so
a
many
heck of a
people
guy.
say that about Bruiser, right? That, oh, he was getting old, he was still putting himself. But that's because people can't, they don't understand what Dick the Bruiser was in Indiana and in the Midwest. My dad hated professional wrestling, hated it, just did not like it whatsoever. But my dad went to professional wrestling when it was in our town when he was younger because of Dick the Bruiser. He didn't care, he didn't like wrestling, but he wanted to see Dick the Bruiser. And because Bruiser was not just a wrestler, he was a celebrity. I mean, he hosted different things on TV and was on the radio and all this different stuff and in parades. And, you know, it's different. He was not just a wrestler in the Midwest and in Indiana. He was a celebrity. And
He was.
so it was different. And people don't understand that.
Well, I remember Scott Hall mentioning Dick the Bruiser to me because he knew I knew him. And he said, yeah, I was watching some of Bruiser's old tapes. And he goes, you know, Bruiser, he was really ahead of his time. You know, that's what Scott Hall was saying. Yeah. Yeah.
He was. I mean, I'm a huge Nick the Bruiser fan. I'm not saying he's perfect, right? There's obviously, but it, you know, a lot of the people that complain about, it's like he would have had to have been able to foretell where the business was going, and I don't think that's a fair assumption on a lot of things. But so tell us, why did you ultimately end up leaving wrestling? And was it just things kind of drying up, or you
Well,
just
no, not
transitioned, or?
really. No, just, you know what, I had an opportunity to get that gym, and my mom, you know, being her caretaker, she was sick. She'd already had a couple heart attacks and she had cancer. So, you know, I thought, you know, this might be a good time for me to kind of step away, even though, you know, I kept watching wrestling and, you know, trying to check people out there that I'd been in the business with. And, you know, and there was a lot of people that I knew. And jumping to one other, yeah, that was the main reason, but with my mom. But then another thing about, you know, did you know David McClain very well?
I do. Yeah, he's a guy that I've talked to a few times trying to get an interview. He's such a busy guy. He's still so active with stuff that he's hard to pin down. But Dave McClain, I mean, what a guy. I mean, again, another great story, right? Begin as a photographer, as a fan, and
Yeah, exactly.
he's.
He was the president of the Bruiser fan
Yeah.
club, and you know, he did it all, and he did a great job with everything. You know,
He
he
did.
carried a quite load, and you know, then he became, you know, he became partners with that Jeannie Buss that owns the Lakers, and they had the
Yep.
Glow Wrestling, Gorgeous
Yep.
Ladies of
Yep.
Wrestling. So he had a mind for the wrestling. You wouldn't really think so. I mean, just looking at him, he seemed like he'd be too preppy to be around the wrestling scene. You
Yeah.
know, I don't mean that in a bad way either, but
No,
no, he fit
right. Yeah.
right in. He did a good job with it. He's always nice to me. You know, I can't say anything bad about really any of them. You know, they did everything they could, you know, to put me over because they kind of had to. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Wouldn't be
Yeah.
good for the business to, you know, be kicking me under the bus or whatever, you know, because it just, you know, because we
Yeah.
all had to work together, really, you know. And Dave, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions real quick? Like,
Sure.
so
Go ahead.
where did you wrestle, and like, what's a little bit of your background? I know
Well,
you interview everybody else, but I'm interested, you know, because you got that look, you know what I mean?
well, yeah, I
You
guess. I don't know. I don't know what look that is. I was born and raised in Indiana. Right now I live in North Carolina for
Okay.
work. So I've lived here about 5 years, but I was my the majority of my life I lived in Indiana. You know,
Okay.
again, was always a fan of professional wrestling, and I started wrestling for some local independents in the 90s. You know, some of the little groups. You know, this is when things were it's kind of struggling, and you know, as far as that go, but yeah, I was wrestling for you know, 10 years or so there around the Indiana. Then I kind of suffered a neck injury, kind of had to hang it up,
Okay.
and then you know, and then I promoted some shows, nothing big, but just. Promoted some shows in Central Indiana, did some different things, and just ultimately, you know, my strongest strength was always talking, right? I could always talk. I'm always thought I was kind of
Well,
quick-witted and things like that. So when podcasts started becoming a big thing, I thought, you know what? I love to talk. I love to talk wrestling. I can talk. So that's where I went into it. I've done this podcast now for 8 years. So yeah, that's what I do now. So.
all your shows are really very professional and
Well,
well
I
put
appreciate
together.
that.
No, there's no doubt. I you know, I really can't think of any. I'm gonna start watching more of your shows, and
Well, I appreciate that.
they're all very professional, and you know, it's a, you know, it'd be nice to get the word out there a little bit more because you do such a great job and it's so entertaining. And
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say because you know, and you got the voice. You got a
Well, I
real good voice.
appreciate it. Yeah. I've
You're very
always had a
attractive. And,
speaking voice all the way back. I mean, I was that kid, you know, in school when we do group projects that I would always volunteer to be the guy to speak because it's like, oh, you know, I don't care. I can talk in front of people. I can talk. And I can speak, and I've always had that. Well, they always told me I had a voice for radio, and you know, podcasts are kind of the modern radio in my eyes. But
No, it is. You do
yeah.
great. I mean, you know, keep it up for sure, because I don't know how many other people do the wrestling podcast, but in my
Oh, there's
opinion,
lots.
what I've seen, well, you're the best that I've ever seen. You know, you got
Well,
a good, you're very
I appreciate
intelligent.
that.
You're on top of everything.
I
You don't say
appreciate it.
anything that's not true. And no, I thought it was an honor to get interviewed by you, to tell
Yeah.
you the truth. Yeah.
Well, and I try to become more conversational than anything, right? And just I feel like it's instead of just shooting questions at someone, I try to just converse with them and have it be try to I mean I've got outlines, right? I've got questions and things I want to hit, but I try to just go with the flow and be conversational, right? Because
Yeah.
I've watched wrestling my entire life. I've been a fan of wrestling my entire life. I love wrestling. Always have loved wrestling. I always tell everybody, right? There, one constant in my life has been professional wrestling. That's the thing that I've had the longest relationship with in my life. So I love, it's a passion. So I love talking to guys and hearing their stories and talking to them about things. And I always view it as getting guys to document their story, right? This is the modern take to me of kind of doing an autobiography or whatever, right? Telling your stories and get up, guys' stories preserved while they're able to. And I think that's very important from a historical aspect, right? Is to do that. And I try to hit a lot of guys that don't do a lot of interviews, right? And of course, with me being a Midwest guy, that helps, right? Because there's not a lot of guys out there that key in on the Midwest and WWA and Dick the Bruiser type stuff. So that's kind of been my bread and butter and my forte. So,
Yeah.
but I
You're definitely.
appreciate all the compliments.
No, you did a great job. To me, you're like the Joe Rogan of the wrestling.
Well,
Yeah, you know. And
well,
that's a compliment, you know.
it's easy when you, I mean, when you enjoy talking about wrestling, right? I love talking about wrestling. And
Well,
it's not hard for me, so I very much enjoy it.
I was really worried about coming on your program because I thought, man, I might only have like 5 minutes of stuff to say, you know. But
Nah.
but you help, carry the person along to keep the stories going. You know, if it
Yeah.
wasn't for you, but I wouldn't have known what to say next. But you carried me like you're in
Well,
the match. You've carried me
yeah.
through the, and I appreciate that.
I'm a very big proponent that anybody involved in the wrestling business has stories to tell. You just gotta make sure you help remind them what those stories are, right? That you just gotta talk to
Yeah.
them. And because you don't have to be a big guy that starred on pay-per-view and TV to have interesting stories. Because this is such a wrestling is such a vast, interesting business that anybody involved for any period of time has got interesting stories. You just got to give them a chance to tell them and talk to them about them. And it's fun. That's the kind of stuff I like to know. I like to know the stuff that has not been talked about 20 million times already, right? I want to hear some of the stories that haven't been told, right? The Spike Huber,
Yeah.
bailing on Indianapolis and things, that hasn't got a lot of attention. That's what interests me. And
He was a great worker, Spike. You know what I mean? Because
he
I
was.
remember in the locker room, he'd be talking to somebody about the match that's about to happen, and he's sitting there
Yeah.
like he wasn't even paying attention. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And I'm like, man, what, that's something. You know me, I'm like glued to the, I can't even remember after the third thing they said. Like, oh no, now what's going to happen? That's why I decided to let it.
Yeah.
And Spike just sitting there like nothing's going on and got it down. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
Yeah,
He was real
Spike's a
good working
dream.
people out there. Yeah, man, he was a great guy and still is, for sure.
Yeah, he's a dream interview of mine, but he doesn't do a whole lot pertaining to professional wrestling anymore. He's left a lot of that behind, and I've talked to him a few times, touched base with him a few times, and I've tried asking him to go on. He's not really receptive. He's a guy that I would love to have on to talk to,
Yeah,
and
well, he.
I'm hoping sometime maybe he'll open up and let me and do it with me. I remain positive about it, but he's a guy that I'd love to talk to.
Yeah, well, he didn't have a big ego. I remember when he decided to kind of walk away from wrestling in a big way because the WWE or WWF at the time, they really wanted to give him a push. And he told me that, I've already seen the stars for me. I'm moving on with my life in another direction. Not a lot of people have done that. A lot of people, they wouldn't have been able to walk away from that fame like that. I mean, he did. He goes, I already seen the stars. He said, I'm good. I'm moving forward, with my life. And then, I guess I heard he got back with Michelle now. Is that
He
true?
did. Yep. He's back with Michelle. I think, I believe, I don't know for sure. I believe they live in Memphis. I mean, I think they're
That's
pretty
what I heard
successful
too.
there, but yeah, he is back with Michelle. And
That is so
that's,
cool. It's
yeah.
like a love story. A love story that went around in a circle. You know what I mean? And
Absolutely. It
yeah,
is. It's a,
yeah.
yeah. And I know there was that period where Spike ran opposition, right? Ran some shows in Indiana. Did you work any of those shows for Spike?
Yeah, he did. He came out as hard hat Huber. You know,
Yeah.
no, he was good with it. He was a big talent. You know, I mean, he
He
helped me
was.
out. I worked for them a little bit. You know, he was opposition. You know, and I think the WWE didn't like that either. But I think he was on the same channel as them, and I think Valiant didn't like that because Valiant was working for the WWE. And, they kind of were trying to keep that down, which they really wouldn't have had to because nobody could really keep up with the WWE, but or WWF at that time. And even oh man, they had a lot of good workers there in the WWE, even the Valiants. Just we could go on and on, but I appreciate all your time and thanks for carrying me through this because I
You
was so
no
low.
problem.
5 minutes of and I'd be like, oh, now we got, what are we going to do for the next 55 minutes? But you care,
Yeah, no. Like I
I
said,
asked
yeah, you're a
you get
fascinating
that.
guy. And talk as we wrap up here real quick and close out. You're obviously still very active in personal fitness training, like we mentioned earlier. So what all
Yeah.
Stormy Grant's like up to nowadays? Are you still in Florida?
Well, I'm down here in Orlando, and right now, I do some personal training, of course, and I'm actually putting a vitamin company together. I've got a guy working on the website right now, and I got another guy helping me out. He used to own Hollywood Videos, and he has his own vitamin company and a big company he has for 30 years. His name is Bruce Brightman. And he's helping me get my own vitamin company going. And right now, the guy's already started the website. You can probably look at it. It's called vitaminstorm.com. You know what I mean? Now we can. I'm just getting started because I got, I'm smart enough to surround myself with people that are a lot smarter than me. Like if I was going to do something in wrestling, I'd be doing something with you, Dave. But I'd be
I don't know
smart enough
about
to bring Dave Dynasty
that.
along and make sure that,
I don't know about that, but
even though we're,
hey.
we work together. You know what I mean?
That's right. Is that do you have a way that people can keep track? I mean, is that the best way? Is just keep an eye on your vitamin thing there, vitaminstorm.com?
That'll be what I'm working on next. You know what I mean? Like I said, I've got the guy that he makes about $200,000 a month in his company. He's going to be my manufacturer,
There you
meaning
go.
that I don't have to go out there and buy 500 bottles of vitamin C. He's going to let me buy one bottle at a time, whatever I need, however build the business up, and he's going to let me have my product in his warehouse where it's climate controlled. And he's going to help me with my shipping, and my website guy's going to help me with the labels and the barcodes. So I got
There you
some
go.
really good people around me, and there's no guarantee that anything's going to take off, but it's interesting, and I like being around health and fitness and vitamins. I mean, because I anything else I'd be lost. So I got to stay in my little path or my little lane. You know what I mean? Whichever lane it is. And I try not to step out of there because I thank God, even I got one skill at least. Some people, they're a carpenter, they're this, they're that. I don't really have anything. Thank God, I know a little bit about nutrition and weightlifting and training, and so I at least have something, and I'm very grateful. Thank God for just what I have, for sure.
Well, I think you're being a little too humble there, Stormy, but
I'm being honest, I'm not being humble, I'm being
Oh,
honest, Dave.
well. Well, hopefully I'm hoping that that a lot of people this will help open some eyes to your wrestling career. I know it wasn't super long, right? You didn't, and whatever else, but you did accomplish quite a bit. And like I said, lots of stories to tell and lots of things. You cross paths with lots of great people,
I
and there's
did.
a lots there. It's a very interesting time for professional wrestling that you were there and involved with, and there's something to be said for that. And
Thanks so much for having me on the program. You did a great job, and I'm going to be paying
well, thank
attention
you.
to all your shows.
Sure,
And
great.
thanks again so much for everything. And let's stay in touch. We don't have to stay in touch like
Absolutely.
I thought. Let's just stay in touch as I like you, and I like
Yeah.
staying with people that I like. You know what I mean? And I
Definitely.
really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop, Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guides for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to USWAPodcast.com.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
All right, guys, and thank you to Stormy for coming on the show and speaking with me. I've stayed in touch with Stormy even since, and hopefully we'll be talking to him more. And who knows, you know, who knows what kinds of things and projects that we could do together. Guys, make sure you go out on social media and look me up and follow me. You can look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty All Word and find me on pretty much any platform. Probably the central, one of the most primary ways is to follow me on X. Blue Sky is also one that I'm kind of leaning on heavy. I kind of like those formats of those apps. So while you're out there, also go check out all the other WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. You can look up the shows by their names or go to WrestleCopia.com, and that will send you on your way to whichever show you want to listen to, and I recommend you listen to all of them. Also, be sure to go check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download their app on all of your devices. Now, next week's guest, this one's a great one. This is a great one, especially for you, those of you who enjoys Stampede Wrestling, and the deep dive I did and everything else. My guest next week is Ross Hart from the famous Calgary Hart family. We talk about his family, Stampede Wrestling, the famous British Bulldog split up that the world never saw, and much, much more. It was a great talk. Ross is just has a steel trap memory, remembers everything. Has some great stories, so much fun, and we just scraped the tip of the iceberg. So Ross will be back on again in the future for further episodes, but make sure you go and check out my talk with him next episode. Thank you again to all of you listeners, supporters, and everybody else for all the follows and interactions. Like I said earlier, give us a rating review, give us a shout out, give us a share, tell your friends, help us out in that way. But until next episode, guys, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
All right, guys, and thank you to Stormy for coming on the show and speaking with me. I've stayed in touch with Stormy even since, and hopefully we'll be talking to him more. And who knows? You know, who knows what kinds of things and projects that we could do together. Guys, make sure you go out on social media and look me up and follow me. You can look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty All Word and find me on pretty much any platform. Probably the central, one of the most primary ways is to follow me on X. Blue Sky is also one that I'm kind of leaning on heavy. I kind of like those formats of those apps. So while you're out there, also go check out all the other WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. You can look up the shows by their names or go to WrestleCopia.com, and that will send you on your way to whichever show you want to listen to, and I recommend you listen to all of them. Also, be sure to go check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download their app on all of your devices. Now, next week's guest, this one's a great one. This is a great one, especially for you, those of you who enjoy Stampede Wrestling, and the deep dive I did and everything else. My guest next week is Ross Hart from the famous Calgary Hart family. We talk about his family, Stampede Wrestling, the famous British Bulldog split up that the world never saw, and much, much more. It was a great talk. Ross is just has a steel trap memory, remembers everything. Has some great stories, so much fun, and we just scraped the tip of the iceberg. So Ross will be back on again in the future for further episodes. But make sure you go and check out my talk with him next episode. Thank you again to all of you listeners, supporters, and everybody else for all the follows and interactions. Like I said earlier, give us a rating review, give us a shout out, give us a share, tell your friends, help us out in that way. But until next episode, guys, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.